My guest today is Dr. Mads Gilbert, who works at the University Hospital of North Norway. Since 1981, after a trip to Beirut, he has been visiting Palestine regularly as a teacher and emergency care physician on behalf of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Over the past few years, he has worked in Gaza hospitals as a strip was under attack by Israeli warplanes. After Israel's Operation Cast Lead in 2008 and 2009, he co-authored a book with his fellow physician Eric Fosse, Eyes in Gaza, and most recently he has brilliantly put together text and photos of the 15 days he spent working in Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital under Israeli bombardment last summer. It's called Night in Gaza, and that's what we will be talking about today. Welcome, Dr. Mads Gilbert, to Takes on the World.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here. It has been just over a year since Israel ended its last summer's bombardment of Gaza, but your new book, Night in Gaza, brought it all back in a way that doesn't require having been there to feel it in your gut, particularly when you realize that it is the American government that has provided Israel with its weapons of human destruction with our tax money. But please tell our listeners what propelled you to write it.
Well, being a medical doctor, I think I can not only clean the floor from the blood that is running from the Palestinian patients. I also have to try to stop the bloodshed by telling my account, my personal experience with the situation in Gaza as a small contribution to the information that might change the power and change the repetitious Israeli attacks on Gaza. As a medical doctor, I have to take part in society. I have to struggle to improve the living conditions of humankind, be it in Norway or in Gaza, in occupied Palestine. And I write the book in order to show two things. Number one, the humanity, the strength, and the persistence of the Palestinian people in general, and in particular the heroic work of the Palestinian healthcare workers during the last attack on Gaza while I was working in Shifa for the fourth time since 2006. This last attack was actually the fourth brutal Israeli attack on Gaza only since 2006. So I write the book in order to show ordinary people the true faith in the sharp end of what is called modern warfare, because our media are sanitized and so censored that we get the wrong impression of what the costs really are on the human side and on the civilian population, not only in Gaza, Palestine, but in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, wherever the West is using military means to increase their colonial powers.
Well, you certainly did an impressive job. It's not a long book. It's about 3/4, half inch thick. But I would read it and look at the photographs. I was in Gaza in 2004, even when there was no, quote, fighting going on. But yet the morning before we arrived at Rafah and the border, the Israelis had destroyed a whole block of homes for no reason. The people whose apartments and office buildings had been destroyed stood around wondering what had happened. And as we stood near the border, you heard the shots of Israeli snipers playing their games with the heads, or trying to mess up the heads of the Palestinian people. You talk about the siege of Gaza, but in truth, Gaza has been really controlled totally by Israel since 1967. Didn't they just change the form of control?
Well, you're right. The West Bank and Gaza, both territories have been occupied by Israel since 67. It's an illegal occupation. It is even recognized by the U.S. State Department as an occupation. It has been condemned innumerable times by the UN General Assembly. And it is, by definition, an illegal occupation. And bear in mind that an occupied people, they actually have the right to resist occupation and also with arms as they see them fit. I do not support any attack on civilians, be it from the Palestinian side or the Israeli side. But the attacks on civilians rests largely and massively on the Israelis as a political responsibility. 70 to 80% of those who were injured, 11,000, and those who were killed, 2,500, during the last attack were civilians. The Israeli governmental army killed 551 Palestinian children within the 51 days and nights that this last attack lasted. One Israeli child was killed. That is, of course, one Israeli child too many. No Israeli children should, of course, be killed, nor should 551 Palestinian children be killed. And 3,500 Palestinian children in Gaza were injured during these 51 days and nights. So the situation is much more brutal than it was in 67. The siege that started in 2007 is still ongoing. That means that the population in Gaza is denied the right to move, to travel, to leave Gaza. They are denied the right to free access to the sea, which they are entitled to control out from the national regulations for coastal states. They are entitled, of course, to import and export what they want. All of this is totally controlled by the occupant Israel. And the medical consequences of this long-lasting siege on Gaza is a massive malnourishment among the children in Gaza. And we have to remember that the population, the 1.9 million people living incarcerated in Gaza, is a child and a very young population. The average age in Gaza is 17.8 years. 60% are 18 and below. So this is a huge child ghetto that is denied food in sufficient amounts, denied the right to travel, denied the right to human security, and being bombed again and again by the same brutal military power that is occupying and besieging their country. And I always try to imagine what the world would have said if Palestinian fighters had gone into Israel and, God forbid, had killed 551 Israeli children. What would President Obama, what would the U.S. Congress, what would the West, the EU have said if that had happened? The problem with Gaza, the problem with occupied Palestine, is that the West is actually supporting a massive apartheid regime, which is so graphically illustrated by this very unproportional numbers of killed and injured on the two sides.
One of the things that has characterized Israel's occupation in West Bank and Gaza and also in Lebanon, which I saw back in the 80s, was sadism. Sadism out front. Even the expression they use, Israeli military officials use, which I mentioned earlier before I called you, as in Gaza, they mow the grass every couple of years, as if these are not humans they're dealing with. And in fact, in the Israeli press, they refer to Palestinians not as Palestinians, but as terrorists, as if a terrorist is just a generic word, and they didn't, and it's necessary to deny the Palestinians their humanity. One of the things that is just occurring, in your book, you talk about the four young Palestinian boys who were killed by the Israelis while playing soccer on the beach before the eyes of the Western press or the foreign press. And just recently, as they usually do, the Israelis have come up with a film claiming that this was all what they call Pallywood, that the killing of these boys was all staged and that it was done, in fact, if they were killed at all, was done by Hamas and not by Israel, despite the fact that there were witnesses to the killing of these boys, and the fact that there's some, and as you describe in the book, there were survivors who were wounded, and it was their family, which was not connected with Hamas at all, that was affected. Perhaps you could talk about this kind of cynical treatment that the Israelis bring in trying to apologize or cover up, rather, their brutality.
Well, let me just recall and remind your listeners that I was denied access to Gaza from November last year by the Israeli government. They claim that I'm a very dangerous person. I'm a medical doctor. I bring my stethoscope and my camera and my notebook, and I do my medical work in Shifa. I am no hero. The heroes are the Palestinian health workers. But what I do is what I do when I work in Norway. I document the medical condition, and I try to understand what caused the medical problems here and in Gaza. And when I describe that, there is a massive condemnation from ordinary people and from sensible politicians. They say, we don't want to live in a world where a political power and a governmental army supported by the U.S. is allowed to kill civilians by the thousands, again and again, with total impunity. We don't want to live in a world like that. And when the pictures are shown, like with the four soccer boys, who were, by the way, they were actually seven or eight friends playing soccer on the beach, down from Shifa Hospital. When these pictures are published, they are so damaging to the Israeli government and the Zionist project that they have to invent and to tell other stories. And they do that all the time. And as you rightly say, they are stamping the Palestinian legal resistance against occupation as terrorists, as a generic term. Now, what I see in Gaza, and what I've seen in Gaza over the last 15 years, and through both intifadas and these last four attacks, 2006, 2008-9, 2012, and now the last one in 2014, is nothing but pure state terrorism. It is a state with an army controlled by politicians and a government supported by the U.S., who again and again are spreading fear, terror, death, and injuries on a civilian population. This is terrorism, and the Palestinians who are defending themselves are actually exercising their right to resist this occupation and this repetitious bombardment. Now, I don't support Hamas, I don't support Fatah, I don't support PA or any political fraction within the Palestinian society. Along with the rest of the Solidarity Movement, I support the Palestinian people, their right to resist occupation, and also their right to make their political choices as they want, even stupid choices. I mean, if the United States people, the good people of the United States would choose Trump as a president, would that entitle the Mexico to start bombing the U.S. because they didn't like the choices of the American people? Of course not. And the elections in 2006 in Palestine were actually instituted by the quartet, by Russia, U.S., U.N., and EU. Hamas participated with the full support of the quartet, and they won a landslide victory. Now, the West didn't like that, and certainly not the occupiers, the state of Israel. And they just started punishing the Palestinians for choices they had done in a democratic election. That's the first democracy in the Middle East who had democratic elections. So, you know, it is so many layers of double standards and hypocrisy to try to conceal the fact that Israeli politics is nothing but occupation, apartheid, and racism. And I'm not talking about the Jews, because all of us support the Jews and their right to be safe. But the criticism is directed against the current politics of the Israeli government, which is political Zionism, which is completely different from Judaism. I am in no way a racist. I volunteered to go to Israel in 1967 to work in a kibbutz because, as most young people in Europe at that time, I was brought up with the narrative of the brave Israel trying to survive and make the desert bloom, and we had to pay back the horrors of Holocaust. And they were defending themselves against the dirty Arabs. I had never heard about Palestine. I didn't hear about Palestine until I started really to dig into this question in 67. So in many ways, it is a bluff. It is in a way a narrative that we have been betrayed into. And we have to make the distinction very clearly between Zionism and Judaism. And I'm so happy to see so many American Jews that are standing bravely up to say, we don't support the occupation of Palestine. We want the Palestinian people to have freedom. We want a just solution. And we certainly do not support Israeli apartheid as it plays out in the West Bank and in Gaza these days. And I think the tool that we have is to do the same as we did against South African apartheid during the white supremacy, the white ruling in the apartheid state of South Africa. It is to boycott the goods. It is to install peaceful divestments and sanctions against the government of Israel until they comply with international laws and until they lift the occupation of Palestine and find a just, peaceful political solution. There is no military solution to the occupation of Palestine.
My guest is Dr. Mads Gilbert, and we're speaking about the situation in the last year's war on Gaza. It's interesting that the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, which is a totally nonviolent movement, is seen as such a threat by Israel, in which they call it an act of terrorism, an act of delegitimization, and of mobilizing all around the world and spending millions of dollars in this country to try and fight it, and even to have Congress make it illegal, which is simply closing all the doors, the means of protest against Israel's illegal occupation. It's interesting, this last summer of mowing the grass in Gaza was the first time that the Palestinians actually resisted to some degree, that they were able to, because they're so outgunned in terms of weaponry. And Israel's response, first in Shujaya, the town out the outside of Gaza City, in which they virtually leveled it. You describe the massacre of Shujaya. Perhaps you could tell our listeners what it was like to deal with the victims of that massacre of Shujaya.
Well, it's hard to describe it in words, my friend. It was a total nightmare. The night of the Shujaya massacre, the night between the 20th and 21st of July last year. The bombardment of Shujaya was so intense, so massive, so desperate by the Israelis that we actually had 400, around 400 patients coming to Shifa Hospital only that night, through the night. And, like the other periods of bombardment, the patients, the relatives, the families came to Shifa and to the other hospitals in large groups, killed, dying, injured, non-injured, children, adults, elders, women, all walks of life, with many of them horrible injuries, amputation, shrapnel wounds, and the like. When you hear about the so-called modern warfare, you hear about surgical strikes, which is, of course, an absurd term, because these strikes are totally indiscriminate. They hit ambulances, they hit civilians, as well as whatever might be their own fighters. So it was a dreadful night. Like many of the others, but the Palestinian health workers never gave up. We were working, waiting in blood, trying to save what could be saved, trying to do the sorting in a reasonable but yet efficient way. And of course, people were dying because of lack of medical resources. Since the hospitals are lacking everything in Gaza as a result of the 7 years of siege, which is also affecting the medical system. So we were lacking trolleys and stretchers. We were lacking local anesthetics. We were lacking drugs of other types. We were lacking everything, and most of all, we were lacking capacity because the Shifa Hospital only has 6 operating rooms. And when you have 400 patients, you might have 20, 30, 40 who needs life-saving surgery immediately. So I have the greatest admiration and respect for the Palestinian paramedics and ambulance people who risk their life all the time picking up injured. We got killed, ambulance paramedics that morning, the Palestinians, who had been rocketed by the Israeli army in their internationally marked and decorated ambulances with the signs that this was Red Crescent or Red Cross ambulance, and in their uniforms, and they are protected by the Geneva Convention, but not protected by Israel. We got in journalists who were killed. I believe the Israelis killed 17 journalists during the 51 days and nights. 16 were Palestinians or Arabs. And again, imagine that the Palestinians had killed 16 Israeli journalists. What would the world have said? The lights go out because everything is run on a two generators. One of the first things that the Israeli army does when they start attacking Gaza is to turn off the power supply. And there is lack of diesel and gasoline and everything you need to run a generator. The generators are old, lacking spare parts. So more often than not, the lights in the operating room lamps would go out, go dark. Staff don't have headlights because headlights are not allowed to be imported into Gaza. So they use the very dim light from the screens of their mobile phones as improvised operating lamps. The park, there is a hospital park. It's a very nice hospital in Pavlyonsk. And the park was completely filled up with refugees, civilians who had fled on foot from Sheshaya to try to escape from the bombardment. In Gaza, there is no shelters. There is no concrete bomb rooms. There is no early warning systems. And the Israelis bomb everything, even the shelters that were designated by the UN to shield the civilians. The Israelis bombed and killed people within the UN schools that were officially designated as shelters for the civilians. Israelis, according to UN, they destroyed 220 schools. None of them, or just a few, have been rebuilt. They destroyed or damaged half of the hospitals in Gaza. More or less, they more or less destroyed or damaged 60% of the primary healthcare clinics. And they killed tens of medical staff. And all of this with impunity, with no consequences for the Minister of Defense in Israel, for the generals, for the soldiers. And I think that Israeli impunity is one of the most important moral and political and human challenges that we have today. Because this is not a ragtag guerrilla army. This is not some lunatics running around like IS. This is a state-controlled governmental army with the most sophisticated weapons you can get in the world today, with full support from President Obama and the U.S. government. And this is what really upset me so much, that the U.S. and EU and the West is sitting ringside with all the information about what Israel is doing during the bombardment, from hour to hour, satellite pictures, numbers from the UN, numbers from the hospital, pictures from us who are working there, and they allow it to happen with no sanctions. And the irony is that when I was working in Shifa during July last year. At the same time, the crisis in Ukraine was unfolding. And the West, the EU, and the US were extremely quick to hand out the sanction card. I'm a strong believer in sanctions, fair sanctions, non-violent sanctions, economical sanctions, trade sanctions, blockade, political consequences. And Russia got all the cards thrown at them, whereas Israel could just go on for 51 days and nights and massacre civilians and bomb hospitals, bomb ambulances, and no consequences at all. This is the big hypocrisy of our time.
And then at the end of the day, other than paying for the UN buildings they had destroyed, Israel's required not to pay a single shekel for the reparations, and other governments, Arab governments, the U.S., foreign governments, meet. They have a donors meeting to decide who is going to pick up what Israel has done, and Israel, there are no demands made on Israel to pay for anything. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And Israel continues to complain that they are accused of being, that they accuse the West of holding them to double standards, when in fact it's the double standards that allow the whole operation, the Zionist operation, to continue.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think people need to actually update themselves on the facts on the ground. I would recommend that you read the full report from the UN Human Rights Council that was released on the 23rd of June this year. It is a very, very extensive report, 180 pages. Basically, the report is confirming everything I'm writing in my book, Night in Gaza, the numbers, the realities on the ground, and it takes it much longer. And again, as an ironic illustration of the type of state that Israel is actually being run like, it's a rough state, I think. It is a state that you really cannot trust because they don't obey to any international rules at all. They denied this group that was this commission, this independent commission that was established by the UN. They denied them entry into Gaza. They just kept it closed, like they deny everybody. They denied Amnesty International entry because they do as they like. They don't care a shit about international conventions. They don't respect the Geneva Convention at all. They say they do. But in this report from the Human Rights Council, it's called Report of the Detailed Findings of the Independent Commission of Inquiry Established Pursuant to Human Rights Council Resolution S21-1. And I think you should take your time to read the report, because in this propaganda war, Israel has the upper hand. And the pro-Israel lobby in the U.S., the Zionist lobby, like IPAC and others, have the upper hand because they're so extremely wealthy and they can sort of put up their sound machines to silence anybody who tries to say anything else. So we have to go to the sources and read the basic material, like this UN report, or subscribe to the OCHA reports, the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and their weekly reports from Gaza, from the West Bank, from occupied Palestine, where you can read week by week about the Israeli atrocities. And then we have to stand up and ask ourselves, where do I stand? And as Desmond Tutu, the brave Archbishop from South Africa, has said, that if you choose to pretend to be neutral, or if you choose to be neutral in a situation of oppression, you end on the side of the oppressor. And he talks from a long life of struggle against injustice, oppression, and apartheid. And both he and Mandela have said that the apartheid system executed by the Israeli government against the Palestinian people is worse than the apartheid system they had in South Africa. And it calls for widespread international boycott, sanctions, and divestment. And when Israel called that peaceful, democratic tool terrorism, they have really outsourced themselves as members of in a way, the organized family of states which are actually trying to obey international laws and protect humanity.
My guest again is Dr. Mads Gilbert. I say amen to all that. What is it's extraordinary how that someone who like Bishop Tutu, respected around the world, is considered an anti-Semite. It's called an anti-Semite here in the Jewish press because he speaks the truth about Israel. And people who have tried to expose the power of the lobby here, which is taboo, also are treated with the same disregard and the same contempt. Israel propagandists will tell us, well, we actually made steps to warn the people. We used the cell. We called them on their cell phones. If the cell phones were working, we dropped leaflets, and they had this trick of dropping an unexploded bomb ordnance on people's roof, letting them know if they didn't get out of their apartment or house, it was going to be destroyed. But as you talked about, where do people in Gaza go? There's nowhere to go. You can't run across a border and become a refugee. These people are refugees themselves, some twice over. That is, to me, is an example of the sadism, that they do this knowing that the people of Gaza are warned, but where do they go? And when they go to a shelter, what can happen? It's happened in Lebanon, too, in Cana, where Shimon Peres was the prime minister, I think it was in the 1990s, something like that, 1999, that Lebanese civilians went into a UN shelter and were bombed by the Israelis, who claimed it was an accident. At first, they claimed that they'd been attacked by Hezbollah. It's an amazing story. Actually, I would say I would advise people to try and read that document, but your book, just under 200 pages with photographs that you managed to take while you were treating patients, and your stories of your interaction with Palestinian doctors and with Palestinian children is so moving. I frankly, as I mentioned to you in an email, I could not do it, read it at one sitting. I think anyone who sees this book, and you're not going to find it at the moment, I'm sure, in your local bookstores, but you can order it on your local bookstores. The book is called Night in Gaza by Dr. Mads Gilbert. That's M-A-D-S-G-I-L-B-E-R-T, published by Interlink Books. And every one of our local bookstores will be able to order it for you and hopefully order more than one copy and put it on their shelves. This is something, Dr. Gilbert, in going through this book, looking at the pictures and your stories, your interactions. I mean, I've been to Palestine. I was spent 4 months in the refugee camps in 1970 in Lebanon and Jordan, and I saw their dignity. What they had, this, the term samud, the steadfastness that they continue to maintain in spite of what they've gone through, without the world doing anything to help them. But your book is a tremendous contribution to this struggle, ongoing struggle. I just have to tell you that I'm holding it, looking at it now.
Yes, sir. I'm happy for your words. I hope that as many as possible in the U.S. will buy the book and read the book. As you said, the title of the book is Night in Gaza, and Interlink is the distributor, and you can also order it from Amazon, of course. I'd like to make a distinction, because I think we have to be very precise that we make the distinction between Jews and Zionism. I don't think it's right to use the term the Jewish press, but the pro-Zionist press is certainly very active in defending the state of Israel and its current occupation politics. But the light side and the optimistic side is that so many young and other Jews, like the Independent Jewish Voices and other organizations
in Canada,
and in Canada, are fighting so hard to raise the awareness and to generate support for the Palestinian people and for the Jewish people for a political and peaceful solution. There is no military solution to the occupation of Palestine. The occupation must end. The military attacks on Gaza and the West Bank must end. The apartheid system must be stopped. And we have to make broad alliances between the unions, the youth, the church, the sports movement, and the general popular movement, like we did when we were fighting against apartheid in South Africa and Rhodesia. At that time, it was, of course, the struggle of the black people and the supporters of the black people in South Africa and Rhodesia, but the international support was a key factor in changing the game. And we see the same now with Palestine and the occupation of Palestine, that unions, the church movement like the Friends of Sabil North America, the youth movement like the Students for Justice in Palestine at the campuses across the U.S., where scores of young Jewish students are joining in the Students for Justice in Palestine because they say, we don't believe in the narrative of the Zionists. We don't believe in the occupation of Palestine. We want another future for our people and for the Palestinian people. This is the optimistic thing in the picture, and everyone can stand up and do their share. And just by going to your local grocery store and check it out, if they have Israeli fruit or Israeli cosmetics or any Israeli products like SodaStream, and ask them to boycott it and get it out. Say that you will not buy any stuff there if they continue to, for example, sell SodaStream, which is produced on illegally occupied Palestinian territory.
Dr. Gilbert, Mads Gilbert, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World. Again, the book is Night in Gaza, and I'm sure we encourage people to use our local bookstores before using Amazon and to get this book out in the community. Get a couple of them, one for your friends, because it's something that even if you've not been there, you will be moved by the humanity of the Palestinians and those doctors who you work with and the children who've shown Samud steadfastness. Again, thanks so much for being our guest and for the great work you've been doing so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And let me just add one thing.
Yes.
All the income, the royalties from the book selling, is going to a foundation I have established, which is called the Tromsø Foundation, Justice in Palestine. So I don't have any income myself. This is the money going back to the solidarity work, the medical solidarity work, and the people-to-people work between Norway and Palestine. So by buying the book, you're also contributing to the solidarity work with Palestine. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. I actually assumed that was the case. Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.